Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is On Air Daily News for Friday, January 20th, 2023. I'm Naima Latif, and today we're joining a White House news briefing, giving updates on local, national, and international issues of concern. Let's join Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre at the White House.
The press is a part of the bedrock of American democracy. That is something that he truly believes and that we should be, you know, continue to fight for. And calling for egregious abuses of power in order to suppress the constitutional rights of reporters is an insult. It is a complete insult to the rule of law and undermines fundamental American values and traditions. So instead, it's the responsibility of all leaders to protect First Amendment rights. And that's what the president believes, and that's what he's going to continue to do, to make sure that we protect those rights.
To follow up on that, he's sat for very, very few interviews since he took office, particularly with print publications. Can you commit to making him more available for one-on-ones with both print and other outlets this year?
Here's what I can tell you. The president is going to engage with reporters almost on a daily basis. He did it yesterday. He took questions from your colleagues yesterday when he was in California, and he will continue to do that. He believes that's important. He believes it's an opportunity to, when he communicates with all of you or answers your question, he believes it's an important, you're an important vessel to the American people, right, pushing out what he is doing on behalf of the American people. He does that almost every day when he's in front of all of you, he takes a question. That's the commitment that I can make from here, from the president. I'm going to move around, Christina.
Thank you for taking my question, Karine. You were just mentioning a possibility of executive actions on behalf of the American people. I was just wondering if the administration is considering any help or relief for thousands of immigrants that were paroled into this country before the agreement of the $30,000 a month. They're here. They don't have jobs. They're depending on different communities, charity work, and some of them have told us that they don't have court dates for another 2 years.
So a couple of things. I'm not sure what executive action. I think I was talking about. I may have been talking about something else. I'm not quite sure. Okay.
I'm talking about unilateral.
So look, the parole program that President Biden announced is, because I know that's usually how this question is connected to, is limited to individuals who are seeking to enter the United States in a legal, orderly manner. The folks who got here before the program was announced remain in immigration enforcement procedures under Title 8. If an immigration judge determines they have a legal basis to stay in the country, they can. If they don't, they will be subjected to removal as required by law. Of course, since day one, the president has taken this issue very seriously. That's why he put forth a comprehensive immigration reform and to fix the system that we currently have. And so that's why he continues to ask. He continues to ask Congress to take action. He continues to talk to and ask Republicans, instead of doing political stunts like we have seen them do over and over again, to actually come to the table and deal with this issue. This is a president who has done more on this issue than any other president. When you think about the record funding that he's been able to put forth, and also trying to figure out multiple ways to deal with immigration, to deal with people who want to come in and come through a legal process, he's offered many avenues to do that. And so, look, he has used the tools that are in front of him to deal with immigration, to deal with border security. But again, he needs Congress, especially Republicans in Congress, to stop doing political stunts and to come to the table and actually deal with an issue that matters to the American people in a real concrete way, not in a way that we're doing political stunts and putting people's lives at risk.
Thank you. On the topic of executive authority, the President's proclamation today, marking what would have been the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, said that he would continue to use executive authority to protect women's rights. What other actions are on the table, and if there are other possible actions on the table, why has he taken them yet?
So look, we're going to take a look of the tools that the President has in front of him to take to see if there's any other executive actions clearly that he can take. But he took some. Right after the Dobbs decision came down, he took a couple of executive actions, and he took them right away in consultation with organizations who really are fighting every day for women's rights. But again, the way that we are going to really deal with what we're seeing currently with Roe v. Wade and making sure that it becomes law is for Congress to act, and that's what you're going to continue to hear from this president. That's what you're going to continue to hear from the vice president, and he's going to certainly, and she will too, use their platform to make that very clear to the American people.
You guys said you've exhausted your options.
I'll just say this. I mean, the proclamation pretty much laid it out very clearly. We're going to see what else we can do, but again, it's going to take congressional action to truly deal with this issue.
Okay. Does the President have any concern about the number of job cuts that are happening in the tech sector? Alphabet announced, this is a concern company, obviously announced 12,000 job cuts today, followed Microsoft earlier this week, following several thousand from last year as well. Is this something the President is concerned about?
So, of course, we watch very closely when we hear these types of reports of Americans losing jobs. That is something that the President is certainly aware of and watching, and clearly his team. But there are data that shows, and I mentioned this the other day, that companies are still continuing to grow. That is important, and they're investing in the United States. So those data points exist. We're seeing that. Layoffs remain record low, according to job opening data. The U.S. economy continues to grow. Initial unemployment claims are historically low, and the unemployment rate is a 50-year low. So leading analysts have publicly stated that they do not believe the recent layoffs in the tech industry are indicative of trends in the broader economy. But of course, when we hear that Americans are losing jobs, we certainly watch that very closely.
One clarification, if I can, on the President's answer yesterday to the documents. He said in that answer that he's doing everything that attorneys are asking him to do, so there's protocol and everything. Was his answer vetted through counsel or anything like that? Can you tell us that?
I mean, it's the same thing that he has said before, which is he and his team are cooperating fully. That's the same answer he has given many, many times, and so has his White House Counsel's office. Is that his and the team
talking about it in the way that he did?
That's nothing new. He has said that before, but again, I'm not going to get into parse the words of the president. It is, you heard him say what he gave his remarks and make his statement. I'm just not going to dive into that.
And then on the meeting on Tuesday with Democratic members, can you sort of characterize what that meeting is? Is it sort of a temperature taking? Is agendas and priorities are set for the upcoming State of the Union speech?
Well, look, I mean, it is part of the new Congress, right? New leadership with the new Congress is an opportunity, clearly ahead of the State of the Union, to connect and continue to grow the relationships that he has with leadership. And they're going to talk about a range of issues. It is not uncommon. I think somebody just pointed that to me. I think it was Josh who said, you know, how common it is to for the president to meet with leadership at this time. So again, we're doing what the president believes is important as he tries to deliver for the American people, to try and do that bipartisanship that he talked about right after the midterms. Because that, we understand that's what the American people want to see, and so that's what you're going to see next week with the president. Go ahead, Steve.
Thanks. Back on what you said in your answer to Josh about the debt ceiling and the question of entitlement. The Nonpartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget said in the fall that what the president was arguing in the lead-up to midterms was that Republicans would cut Social Security, cut Medicare, but the president was not offering his own specific plan for how to ensure the stability of those programs. There were a few sentences on the campaign website 3 years ago. Does the president have a plan to ensure that Social Security and Medicare will remain solvent in the future? This is now the halfway point of this administration.
The president's plan is that he's going to protect Social Security. He's going to protect Medicare. And what he is saying very, very clearly here, and we have said this, you heard us, as you mentioned, you heard us say it during the fall, is that, you know, we're going to continue to call out Republicans who are threatening. They are threatening to force cuts on Social Security, on Medicare, and critical programs that benefits everyday Americans. Because they want to play this political gamesmanship. And that is something that we are going to call out. As it relates to the debt ceiling, this is something that should be done in a bipartisan way. That's what the president believes. That's what he has been saying very, very clearly. We should not put on the chopping blocks the very programs that matter to American people. Let's not forget, they've already paid in to those programs, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. This is something that Americans have paid into, and Republicans want to cut that.
So I guess my question, though, is, you know, what they say is that Medicare in 3 to 5 years will not be able to meet all its obligations. Social Security, 12 years, will not be able to meet all its obligations. The president's been president for 2 years. He hopes to be president for 6 more years. When is he going to lay out a specific plan? Will we hear it at the State of the Union? Will it come in 2023?
It's what we're saying is, and I just said this, these are programs that the American people pay into. These are programs that are veterans, that are seniors, right? Americans across the country really value and need. And when you have a, you know, these MAGA Republicans in the House who are saying they're going to hold the debt ceiling unless those things are cut, that is a problem. That is not how this works. I mentioned 78 times that the debt ceiling has been dealt with. Three times in the last administration. So we should not be doing this with conditions. It should be done without conditions. And we should not be negotiating around it. And let me just give you a couple of validators, because I think it's important. This came from Leader McConnell, who said America must never default on its debt. It's never have and never will. Neil Bradley, who I think I talked about a little bit from Chamber of Commerce a couple days ago, you're talking about wiping out the very underpinnings of the U.S. economy. I mean, that is what they're trying to do. They're trying to hold programs that are critical and important, again, to our veterans, to our seniors, because they're trying to play political games. And that is the thing that the president's going to continue to call out against. Okay,
Alicia. Thank
you. Oh, he is. I'm so sorry, guys. The president's about to speak. I can't step on the president. Thank you, everybody. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. With your performance.
And that was White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre addressing a number of issues, among them women's reproductive rights, and some of Florida's current policies. Also, during this conference, addressing the war between Russia and Ukraine and U.S. assistance and the limits, if any, of that assistance. Also, addressed in this conference, concerns over the current legal issues the White House is facing, and Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre consistently states that that is not something that will be discussed from the press secretary's podium. The president is about to speak, and therefore the White House press briefing was ended. Today, across the nation, there are continued efforts to address many of the issues that were raised during the recent election. And the continuous difficulty in passing laws, confirming leadership, developing a clear direction for America, and addressing its ongoing economic crisis. As the government prepares to address yet another focus on its immigration policy, Many families who are immigrants who may not be documented are concerned with what could in fact happen should their residency be challenged, and families are concerned that they could be disrupted based on current government policies. Today in Chicago, Third World Press is announcing that it has established a fund to address a recent flood that happened in its facilities. Sending out a letter to supporters, Third World Press states, "Dear friends, last year marked our 55th anniversary in the publishing business. We are very proud to have built the oldest independent, continuously operating black publishing company in the nation. In October, we celebrated with gusto and invited our supporters, friends, authors, and family to our headquarters to commemorate with us. The winter season is traditionally busy for us as we fill holiday orders for the Kwanzaa and Christmas gift-giving season. This year, however, our efforts were dampened when a water pipe burst beneath our building on a Friday night and quickly flooded the entire basement. Unfortunately, the flooded area housed the major portion of Third World Press backlist as well as front-listed books. Our loss has been overwhelming and financially crippling. Our lost inventory consisted of many of our bestsellers and included books by Gwendolyn Brooks, Chancellor Williams, Adelaide Sanford, Fred Hoard, Diane Turner, Tabiti Lewis, John Henry Clark, Herb Boyd, Edmund W. Gordon, Angela Jackson, Eugene Perkins, Jacqueline Bryant, Keith Gilliard, Jacob Carruthers, Amiri Baraka, Sonia Sanchez, Christine List, Haki R. Matabuti, and many others. To say that we are devastated is an understatement. We desperately need your help. The considerable dollar amount of our loss is approximately $95,000 based upon damaged books, furniture, computer, bookshelves, workers, regular and overtime pay for cleanup, and the relocation of salvageable books to the first floor. We were forced to close the last 2 weeks of December and the first week of January, thereby losing sales for the year and holidays and fundraising. These activities make up over one quarter of our annual revenue. If we are to survive this catastrophe, we earnestly need your help. We have a 501c3 status, and your donations are tax deductible within the full extent of the law. No contribution is too small. Thank you for your thoughtfulness and generosity during this trying time. Sincerely, Haki R. Matabuti, on behalf of the Third World Press Foundation, staff, and volunteers." And, of course, to get more information, you may email TWP3orders@gmail.com, and that is TWP, the number 3, orders, O-R-D-E-R-S, at gmail.com. Third World Press Foundation is located on Chicago's South Side, and the devastating loss is one that supporters are striving to overcome by going to the GoFundMe page. And you can go to https://gofund.me/e98d712c. That's https://gofund.me/e 98d712c. And that provides the link where you may, in fact, donate funds. Again, this fundraiser is to assist Third World Press in its astronomical recovery cost of $95,000 for damaged books, furniture, computers, bookshelves, workers' pay, and the location, the relocation of salvageable books, and the work done to salvage what was left, and the loss of regular income during the holiday season. And now we will join President Biden as he welcomes bipartisan mayors to the White House and delivers an address. Biden is entering the White House. And preparing to speak.
Please be seated. Thank you, Mr. President, for continuing this incredible tradition of inviting the mayors from the U.S. Conference of Mayors to the White House. It's really an honor. And I'll tell you, as I walked through this iconic building with my family, I couldn't help but notice the picture of bipartisan presence throughout the years, and I thought that was a wonderful testament to the bipartisan nature of our organization, of the U.S. Conference of Mayors. And it was reminded me of a story that my dad once told me. He said that at a particularly difficult moment in Lyndon Johnson's presidency, they said to him, you know, Mr. President, can it get any worse? And he sort of thought about it, and he paused, and he said, oh, sure, I could be a mayor. Thank you so much, Mr. President. Mr. President, honorable members and fellow mayors, America's mayors stand on the front lines of American democracy. We serve the American people every day from every background and in every part of the country. We listen and lead. We serve and protect. And we deliver for everyone. While we hold different viewpoints, philosophies, and experiences, today, we all carry a common message. Our federal government should act, and we need it to act as quickly as possible. It needs to address the potholes of America. It needs to find a solution to the humanitarian and security crises on our border. This means addressing the core drivers, not just the symptoms of this crisis. From our confronting the repressive regimes of Latin America to the human trafficking cartels, we must act. And we also must act on modernizing our visa system and our dysfunctional immigration laws. And I was pleased to see you, Mr. President, begin to address these issues recently when you visited the border. But of course, we all know we have a long way to go. We also need to act on public safety. We, from the federal government to the local government, need to clearly support our police. You said that just a year ago at our conference. We must bring the defund police movement to an end in word and in deed. We must support. We know the president is committed to funding law enforcement, and for that, we are grateful. We also must revisit failed policies like no cash bail, which seem to be contributing to the spike in violent crime in our cities. We need to act on maintaining our fiscal health and economic security. All of us here must balance our budget and honor our debts. The federal government must do the same, just as mayors have done across America. continue working together in the spirit of the bipartisan infrastructure law by further building out our American infrastructure, from roads and bridges to our digital economy. We share your concerns about strengthening our infrastructure and our security. We need to do more, we want to do more, and God willing, we will do more, together to strengthen America and keep our future strong. Thank you for your time, thank you for your hospitality, and thank you again for hosting us today in the White House. And now I'd like to introduce the second Vice President of the conference, Andy Ginther, the Mayor of Columbus, Ohio, the heartland of the country, to share a few remarks on how our partnership with the administration is rebuilding American manufacturing, we just talked about, and strengthening the nation's economy. Thank you.
Thank you, President Suarez, Vice President Sheedy, all of our colleagues here today. As President Suarez mentioned, I'm Andy Ginther, Mayor of the City of Columbus and part of the leadership team at the U.S. Conference of Mayors. I have the pleasure this afternoon of introducing someone who has been an incredible friend, our strongest ally as America's mayors. When this president, think about this, just 2 years ago, this president entered office, American cities were hurting. We were still trying to make our way through the most disruptive global event in any of our lifetimes. Mayors were on the front lines of the pandemic and all the downstream consequences, economic disruption, mental illness, gun violence, homelessness. We got to work, and so did this president. He said, we're not just going to build back. We're going to build back better. And working hand in hand with local leaders, he has delivered over and over and over again. Our CEO and Executive Director, Tom Cochran, has been at the helm of the Conference of Mayors for more than 50 years. I know he agrees when I say the last 2 years have been the most consequential and productive for mayors in the history of the U.S. Conference of Mayors. So much of that is thanks to our partnership with President Biden. The American Rescue Plan ensured we could protect public health, keep city workers on the job, and keep our local economies afloat. The bipartisan infrastructure law, allowing us not to just catch up on years of neglect, but jump ahead and claim the future to beat out the rest of the world so we have the most efficient and safe transportation system for the 21st century. The Inflation Reduction Act delivers on one of the mayor's biggest priorities, fighting back against climate change. The gun safety legislation shows that fighting back against guns, we have more to do, but we do not accept that deaths from gun violence in our communities are just an acceptable part of living in America. The first time since the Clinton administration, bipartisan gun safety legislation is now the law of the land because of this president. Something incredibly important to my community in our part of Ohio, the CHIPS and Science Act, will ensure that the United States, not China, is leading the development of new technology. It has the potential to turn the old Rust Belt into the new Silicon Valley.
And that was from the White House, welcoming the World Conference of Mayors and addressing common interests of cities across America. That's all for today. You've been listening to On Air Daily News. I'm Naima Latif. Join us again on Monday at 1 p.m. Central, 2 p.m. Eastern, Until that time, continue to enjoy the rest of your day.